It was 1992, the Los Angeles riots. Rodney King.
Can we all get along?
Reginald Denny.
Oh, look at that.
South LA, Koreatown. From one end of Los Angeles to the other, there was violence for 5 days. Back in 2017, we took a look back at those days and talked to some of the people involved. Time has given us a bit of perspective on those events. Why did the uprising happen? Can it happen again? We look back at that special report and hear some new voices on the 30th anniversary of the LA riots as Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. Hard to believe, but it's been 3 decades since one of the worst uprisings in the city of Los Angeles. 6 days of violence, rioting, fires, and terror across the city of L.A. The civil disturbance was set off after a jury acquitted 4 LAPD officers who had been charged with excessive force in the arrest and beating of Rodney King. Ultimately, the man at the center of the firestorm was called upon to ask for peace.
I just want to say, you know, Can we all get along? Can we get along?
Those words, some of the most poignant and powerful of all time. But the question, can we all get along? Can we all get along? Still remains after 30 years. Joining us to talk about some of those lingering questions is Jody Armour, a professor at the USC Gould School of Law. And Jody, it's good to see you again. It's always good to talk to you about these sort of things. And I guess what I want to do right now is ask you to transport yourself back to April 29th of 1992. And I want you to think about a younger Jody Armour, what you were doing that day, what you were thinking, and what still lingers in your mind.
Well, I can remember the day, the time, and the weather. That's how vivid it was, because it was one of those moments. We had seen the Rodney King beating, the videotape of the beating, saturating the airwaves for a year, right? Because this was the first time we had 24-hour news cycles on cable news. And so anytime you turn on the TV, you could see Rodney King getting beaten. And the video seemed just as clear as the George Floyd video, right? It seemed clear something wrong had happened. And then came the verdict. And the verdict was jaw-dropping. It seemed like we were being gaslighted. Black America was being gaslighted, because this was a jury. This was a 12-person jury. So it wasn't just police officers who you could say are a few bad apples. The jury, as the voice of the community, representatives of the community, have said, we don't see anything in this video that crosses the line. And that was what was so shocking, right? It seemed like there was ocular proof of wrongdoing, and yet much of America didn't see it that way. And I suddenly realized that I may be living in a different social reality than many of my countrymen and countrywomen. And so it was a real wake-up for me at that time in 92.
Not that you're an old man now, but you were a much younger guy back then. And back then, I don't know if you were teaching at that point or where you were in your life, but did you go to the streets? What happened? What did you do?
Yeah, this was a national event, Hal. So I was way out in Pittsburgh. I was teaching. I was talking to students about criminal law. I was teaching criminal law and torts. But even out in Pittsburgh and in Philadelphia and in Baton Rouge, everywhere, black communities felt this, you know, because this, again, was a jury speaking with the voice of the people. And it seemed that there was a double system of justice. And So it was really kind of a bracing experience, Hal, and one that anticipated what we saw 25, 30 years later with the George Floyd tapes and the other videos that have come out as part of the Black Lives Matter movement.
You alluded to it. One of the distinctive features of the L.A. riots was the role video played, video taken long before there were smartphone cameras, video taken by a man named George Holliday. To really understand the L.A. riots, you have to go back a year earlier. The LAPD pursuing a suspect in LAPD's Foothill Division. They stopped not far from where George Holliday lived. He grabbed a video camera he had just purchased, and what he witnessed would be soon seen by the entire world.
I was woken up by the sirens and the helicopter outside, and when I looked out of my window, there was an individual spread-eagled on the car that had been stopped right across the street from my apartment.
I interviewed George Holliday at that apartment. We stood on the balcony from where he shot that video. Holliday died in September of 2021 from COVID. Also seen by the entire world, Jody, was that graphic beating of Reginald Denny, an astonishing video of the brutality happening on L.A. streets. It was shot by helicopter reporter Zoe Tur and appeared live on our sister station, KCOP. Here's a look back at that.
Oh, look at that. Terrible. And there's no police presence down here.
Chaos. The city is burning. Everything's on fire. And it felt like I was in a war zone.
Zoe Tur was Bob Tur back in 1992. With Bob and the Chopper, he and his wife would be America's eyes on history.
This was just rage. This is just nonsensical, insane rage.
This is attempted murder.
I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I really couldn't believe it.
These images, Jody, in our mind, but as you watch them, as you think about them, what's your reaction to them?
Yes, this is blind rage. I think the earlier voice was right. You had a rage, pent-up rage, a reservoir of rage in the Black community from years and years of what they felt were oppression by this occupying force of the police department. And the rage is blind, and that's why our hearts go out when we see it spilling over into somebody who is innocent, had no part of this. But that's the price, you know, we pay when the criminal justice system loses its moral credibility and legitimacy in the eyes of many in the community. It seemed like justice was no longer something that could be, you know, even a consideration, and people fell into a blind anger and rage, and it was heartbreaking to see that.
Jody, let me ask you, here we are 30 years later. What's your thought? Where are we? Have we made progress?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? Because here, 25, 30 years later, we were talking about George Floyd, and we saw this long procession of hashtags starting with the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, from Sandra Bland to Walter Scott to Eric Garner. And it seems like we recognize the problem more, but we don't yet know how to get a handle on it. We've seen, you know, there's a kind of racial injustice Groundhog Day that we keep waking up to. Until we figure out how to get to the bottom of this problem, I think we're going to keep waking up to the same pattern of problem.
Yeah, but we have 30 seconds. Is there something that you think would make a difference?
Yeah, I think figuring out a way to have more effective policing. Right now, we don't necessarily need policing when it comes to traffic violations, for example, which is what sparked Rodney King. They've done in many jurisdictions, they've taken away the traffic function from police, and crime hasn't gone up, traffic accidents haven't gone up. So finding ways to minimize the footprint of law enforcement in the Black community and alternatives to the police to help solve the community problems like houselessness and other problems related to poverty.
All right, USC professor Jody Armour, thank you very much for joining us. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we look back at what went wrong 30 years ago and if we're making progress in healing our differences. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and we look back now at the L.A. riots 30 years ago. Joining us right now is Earl Ofari Hutchinson. He's an author. He deals with commenting on social issues, and I've known him for a very long time. And so good to see you, and I want to tell everybody you have a number of books that deal with these sort of things. How many books do you have right now?
All right, 21 at this point. Actually, I'm working on two more. On a little subject.
You're a very prolific writer. Look, you and I talked about all of this, the L.A. riots from 30 years ago now. We talked about it 5 years ago during our 25-year special on Fox 11 News In Depth. And I want to play a little piece of that, and then we'll talk on the other side. Take a listen.
Okay.
We always know that there's always going to be room for improvement between the LAPD, sheriffs, and police agencies with the African-American community. We know that. We also know that there's got to be more emphasis on doing what business leaders and public officials promised they would do 25 years ago, namely invest in this area.
That was 5 years ago. It's now been 30 years since the uprising on the streets of L.A. So where are we now? We still have issues, of course, but have we made some progress, Earl?
You know, we have made progress. I mean, in all fairness, you know, there's always a doom and gloom that people want to raise and say, you know, things have stayed the same or have gone back. You know, I always look at it this way, Hal. It's really a question of the glass being half full and half empty. It's both. When you talk about the thing that triggered the L.A. riots, and before that, the 1965 Watts riots, I'm old enough to remember that. you know, it's always the police and policing in the community. Always a sense that they're an occupying army, they being the LAPD. And so you got the tensions, you got the resentments, and that's been accumulated over a period of time. So we come 30 years later. I mean, I know it's been mentioned many times about George Floyd, Black Lives Matter. You still have police violence, police misconduct. Certainly in L.A., we have a district attorney that's under fire now because one of the issues he made was going after, prosecuting, monitoring, but especially prosecuting police misconduct. So, you know, how it's still an issue. But here's the good news. The good news, when you do have a district attorney and other district attorneys, you do have public officials that actually recognize we have problems. We have to get a handle on it. And we're not just talking about the community. We're talking about public officials that are charged with responsibility, be it the police or public services or all things in between. I think that's a good sign. We have that acknowledgement that we do have problems. We got to get a handle on it.
So let's talk about public officials. One of the sources of conflict that's often cited, the LAPD. Police were overwhelmed by rioters, officers struggling to deal with outbreaks of violence that were seemingly everywhere. And then Police Chief Daryl Gates was the target of much of the city's anger.
Biden, once again, didn't put 42 years in this job, 13 years as chief of police, to see it blow up in smoke.
Chief Gates was a contentious figure. We have a very different police chief now in Michael Moore. Do you think, Earl, that makes a difference to the community? And have there, you know, we've had a number of high-profile police chiefs, and have we all learned something from chief after chief after chief?
Well, I would certainly hope so. I mean, think about it, Hal. We've had the passage of time now. Nothing stays the same and nothing stands still. After 1992, I think there was a deep soul search in the city. What went wrong? So what did we see? We saw obviously a change in at the top in the administration. We saw two or three new police chiefs come in. We also saw an inspector general. We saw a revamped LA Police Commission. We saw a city council, a lot of change on that, that began to look at police problems. We also saw something else, Hal, that we didn't really see 25 years ago, 30 years ago. We saw a lot of change at the top in terms of how it looked. More women, more LGBT, certainly more African Americans, more Hispanics, more Asians. So you saw an administrative change at the top. And then one other thing that I was very cognizant of, because I wear another hat as president of the LA Urban Policy Roundtable, we actually saw for the first time a number of police officials come into community meetings, outreaching, always with an ear on what can we do, how can we better serve the community. So I think in looking at the glass half full, I think that's the progress that's been made. It's not quite the same LAPD, thank goodness, that we saw 30 years ago.
But the question still sort of remains, that Rodney King thing. Can we all get along?
Well, I think that was a memorable line. I think a lot of people said it's a little Pollyannish, it's a little idealistic, but I think there was a kernel of truth there. At the end of the day, we're all in this together. So whether you wear a badge and a gun and a uniform, or you have a business in the community, or you are a working person in the community, we all have a stake in the viability of our community. If you have police misconduct, police abuse, police violence, that is self-defeating. And I think what we've learned from that, Hal, is certainly at the top in the LAPD is you can't ignore problems. You can't turn the other way. You can't turn a blind eye and sweep it under the rug. Is it perfect? Is there change that still needs to be made? I think even within the LAPD, I think there's admission we still have things that we can work on within the community and policing. But the key thing is the acknowledgement that we're trying to change. I think that's so important.
But I have to ask you, and you alluded to George Floyd, given that the current situation that we see ourselves in from time to time to time, are we just one videotape away from another uprising?
You know, I thought about that question the other day. We had another shooting in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It was caught on video. And I thought about, here we go again, Rodney King, and now everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's got a mini cam. Everything is now public view. And when that happens, everybody sees it. It goes global. And that can inflame. That can incite. that can certainly raise tensions and anger. I think the key thing is when that happens, to make sure it doesn't happen, what we're seeing here is officials, be it the LAPD, city officials, county officials, business leaders, religious leaders, get out front on it. Immediately get out front. Whatever needs to be done, dialogues, meetings, community sessions. And the other thing, Hal, I think is critically important, accountability, transparency. If you have a police department that's committed to that at all times, not sweeping things under the rug or apologizing, then I think you really a great step down the line toward the kind of change that we really want to see to make sure, Hal, that question you asked, and by the way, you asked that question 25 years ago on the 25th anniversary. Hopefully, you won't have to ask that question on the 35th or the 40th.
Yeah. Earl Ofori Hutchinson, as always, thank you very much. Good to see you again. And coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, the riots raged through Koreatown 30 years ago. Up next, we're going to take a look at how the Korean community is healing. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. The uprising is often thought of as largely affecting South Los Angeles, but it was much more widespread. This was how we look back in 2017 during our 25th anniversary in-depth special at the scope of the violence.
And it wasn't just in South L.A. It was all over town, and particularly in Koreatown. There were Korean-American business people who ended up devastated. Families were torn apart. During the uprising, Koreatown took a beating. To rebuild after the fires and looting that took a terrible toll on local businesses and business owners, Korean-American groups were formed to provide assistance and counseling to small business people, people that lost so much.
Haepin Im is another person I've known for a long time. Good to see you again. Thanks for joining us. Haepin is the president and founder of Face LA. That's Faith and Community Empowerment. And yeah, you're a very active group. I know you're doing a lot of work. You weren't exactly around during the riots or since the riots. You came in, though, to try to help with the healing, right?
Yes, actually, I was 24 at USC. I was an MBA student. Actually, though, doing internship down in Toshiba, Irvine. But, you know, as a single Korean-American, I was partying in Koreatown. And so even right before the L.A. riots broke out, I was in Koreatown.
What was the impact of the riots on Koreatown?
Well, it wasn't just Koreatown. It was really a larger part of the L.A. community. But definitely Koreatown was devastated. And out of the 3,000-plus businesses that were destroyed, over 2,365% of these Korean businesses, the businesses were Korean owned. And so it was quite devastating. But I think more than that, the failure of the police and the elected officials to protect really, I think, crushed, I think, the Korean community's vision about what the American dream is about and about what America is about as well.
Yeah, we see these images. We see these images of the destruction. We see the emotion, the tears. We see the young Korean men up there on the top of a building with firearms. There was tension.
Absolutely, and these young men were out there risking their life, and actually people died because of the failure again to respond. And there were. Particularly black gang members that were coming up to Koreatown, and these Korean young adults were able to initially prevent them from coming further. I heard that actually the first day, the first night, they even say, hey, we're like you, you know. And so they actually parted. But then in the subsequent days, they did manage to come and terrorized and created utter devastation.
You know, here we are 30 years later. And there's still hate crimes. There's still stuff we don't like. Well, what is FACE doing to try to deal with this in the face of this anxiety?
I think, first of all, I believe that the LA riots was probably the largest incident of anti-Asian violence in U.S. history. And as you say, that there's been, I believe, over 11,000, maybe 12,000 reported incidents of hate anti-Asian hate. And so you're right that it is not stopping. And for me as a Korean American who has really actually been a beneficiary of mentorship from many wonderful leaders in the Black community, particularly the optics of Black on Asian crime, as well as my conversations in the past about the LA riots and the Korean store owner slash relationship with the Black community, I would see sometimes these leaders who are, again, good people, right? Instead of responding with empathy, would have almost like a look of vindication, almost like Dr. Jekyll and Hyde. And it really pained me, almost kind of like someone who has a girlfriend that, a boyfriend that your parents don't approve. And along this journey, one of the things that I came to realize is that, you know, I believe that that relationship between the Black customer slash Korean slash Asian store owner has been misdiagnosed. What we are doing as an organization is helping to lift up the reality of many of these store owners that they are not exploiting, they're not profiteering, they're not necessarily racist, they're not necessarily targeting, you know, the Black community to exploit, but in many ways, they are in the same economic wheelchair as the Black community.
Let me jump in there because we only have about 30 seconds left, and I want to know about Saigu. Can you tell me about that?
Yes.
And am I pronouncing that right, Saigu?
Saigu, 429, April 29, according to the LA, in Korean language, April 29. And we are doing this campaign, Serve, Advocate, Inspire, Give, and Unite. We're reclaiming this word for something positive. And that is to really, again, unite our voices, unite our communities by fostering bridges of understanding and helping people to open eyes about the myths that we tell of each other, particularly the Black and Korean tension, and which when you open eyes up to the truth, you can open hearts. And I have to say it has led to some amazing, amazing, beautiful moments, including our recent press conference where Najia Lee, a Black activist, acknowledged the pain and suffering that was inflicted on the Korean community.
Haepin, we're going to have to go on that note. Haepin M, thanks so much. Good to see you again. And we'll be back with more Fox 11 News in depth right after this break. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in depth. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. And tune in next week when we take a look at the technology that helped television coverage of the riots 30 years ago and how it has changed over the years. We'll see you next time.